like a picture that is fading. These poignant words that were shared by a person with the early stages of Alzheimer's disease magnify how that loss of memory is so intimately connected to a sense of a loss of identity. And TC so eloquently shared and put those two things together for us. Alzheimer's is one of many forms of dementia, and dementia being an overall term that describes a constellation of symptoms with a decline in memory and thinking skills, cognitive skills together. So for today's purposes, when I'm talking about Alzheimer's, unless I'm talking specifically about Alzheimer's or people who work with Alzheimer's, I'll simply use the term memory loss or dementia, recognizing that the spiritual lessons are similar through all of these kinds of cognitive age-related losses. There are about 50 million people worldwide who are living with Alzheimer's and other dementias. That's a lot of people. How many of you know someone who has been impacted by some form of dementia? It's hard not to, right? Watching someone fade or recognizing your own fading can be excruciatingly painful. It is one of the greatest fears that people share about their aging process. Local Alzheimer's expert Megan Carnerius, who wrote a fabulous book, which I will send out on the listserv after this service, wrote how early in her career in the 1990s, she was staffing an Alzheimer's Association table that was at a health fair. And next to her was the American Cancer Association and the American Heart Association and the audiologist. And she was watching people go by and stopping at the American Cancer Association and stopping at the American Heart Association. And in a full day, only 4 people came to her table at the booth. 4. And she said it was kind of like people were making a wide berth around her table as if it would be contagious if they stopped and touched her table. There is so much fear about memory loss, so much fear about it. In part, I think because of this connection to identity, that if we lose this part of our being, we've lost it all. I don't really believe that's true. And people who work in the field and in my studies, I've found that there is something else, but it still brings us fear. There's no doubt that it is frightening and difficult. And in my sharing, I in no way want to gloss over that pain, but I want to be able to add to some possibilities of what might be available to people during this life stage if you are either caring for someone with memory loss or beginning to experience it yourself. Presbyterian minister Fred Rogers of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood wrote, I know, see, oh, we love Mr. Rogers. Anything that is human is mentionable, and anything that is mentionable can be more manageable. Anything that is human is mentionable, and anything that is mentionable can be more manageable. He is fast becoming my favorite theologian. Because fear stops us from wanting to learn new things. The fear of not mentioning it, not walking up to the table, not acknowledging it, can be the hindrance that closes us off to the possibilities for learning and even spiritual awakening in the midst of life's difficult moments. We have Ronald Reagan to thank, actually, for decreasing the stigma around Alzheimer's. It was in 1994 that he named that he was suffering from Alzheimer's disease. And that opened up a door for the nation to begin to talk about this very challenging, challenging disease. Not everybody needs to be that public, of course. But as frightening and painful as it may be to admit to yourself or to those you love, that memory loss is increasing to something that might be diagnosable. Doing so not only has benefits for you and your capacity for quality of life, but it will open up new opportunities for learning in new ways, for both you and the people who love you. Gisela Webb is a professor of religious studies who watched her mother die of Alzheimer's, and so she was curious. She brought a religious lens into this process with watching her mother. And she wrote, "I call Alzheimer's the great unlearning because it is clearly an unraveling of mind, language, and formal knowledge. But in my experience," she writes, "there is a center or centers of apprehension and experience, such as humor, intuition, and emotion, that are clearly intact much longer than the mind and our capacity to use language." She writes, "The nature of Alzheimer's decline suggests to me both the reality of the radical impermanence of life, which is a spiritual lesson, a deeply difficult spiritual lesson, and those of us who have some Buddhist background can really connect in with that, or use Buddhism, connect with that. But also, not just the reality of the impermanence of life, but the reality of something deeper, some deeper," she says, "knowing or knower. And we must honor that deep and abiding part of that person, that ground that that person," Paul Tillich, the theologian, calls it the ground of all being, "that center in that person, despite the eroding of the most basic characteristics of humanness, that self-reflective consciousness." She asks if Alzheimer's disease is a kind of returning to our origins, those origins that exist in a pre-dualistic state, the origins of us that are prior to our sense of separation and the shame that gets kind of put on us as we are going through getting wounded by life. And that when we strip those away, there can be something left that we can see there. She also writes that she calls Alzheimer the great unlearning because we too, the caretakers, she says, need to find ways to have deeper forms of awareness within ourselves so that we can better read the signs for the needs of those we are caring for over time, and to facilitate their healing or their peace as best we can. She says, "Alzheimer's caretaking is an opportunity to begin our own process of unlearning, of facing that within ourselves which needs knowing, healing, changing, and yes, even dying. Facing those parts in ourselves that we are so attached to, that make it then difficult for us to connect to someone who doesn't have that capacity to connect on those levels with us." So today I'm going to share a couple of possibilities for spiritual learning in the midst of either being someone who is experiencing dementia or being their caretaker. The first one is passing along your story. TC talked about that quite a bit. And there's a psychologist named Alan Dienstag who started writing groups for people with the early stages of Alzheimer's. And at first he thought it was impossible to do and it wouldn't work, but what he realized was the writing was so tangible that people really wanted to be a part of these writing groups. And at the beginning, he asked people to hand over their writings almost because he was pretty sure that they wouldn't remember where they put them. But then he realized that there was something very profound, that handing over their writings was an enactment of something. They were turning their memories over to someone else to be the caretaker of them. And I will tell you, I am so grateful that my father, 10 years before he died, wrote his life story for us. I'm so grateful I have that in his own words, what his life meant to him. So these early stages of memory loss can be a really beautiful moment to begin to pass those memories on to someone else. The other piece of spiritual lesson, the other possibility here, is being present to what is, even if it's not a shared reality. Even if it's not a shared reality. Dementia slowly unravels the brain and can take the person with the disease back to previous times in a very non-linear fashion. Have any of you experienced that with people with dementia? Yeah, it can be very disorienting or be confused. It can be very disorienting for a caregiver to be confused for someone from another era. As she was talking about her experiences growing up in World War II just a few weeks ago when I was with my mother, she looked at my brother and she said, well, you were there, you know. And it took us a while to, first we started going, no, Mom, look, it's your, you know, and then we just let it go. And it actually enabled her to stay in that story a little longer, a story that she was making meaning out of her life. And it was a much better story, that meaning making, than the story of the hospital, sitting in a hospital room. So the point there is not to be right in a relationship, but to be able to connect with the feeling states, not the facts. The feeling states, not the facts. And that is, my friends, another form of reality. And it might be a form of reality that we ignore in much of our lives. That might be part of our unlearning, to learn to connect with all people a little bit more in that feeling state than arguing about what's right, about the weather, or what we had for dinner last week, or whatever might be showing up. And really, it can be liberating, actually, to be in those places where you can just be with somebody where they are feeling. And it can be frustrating. Very frustrating, and nobody does it perfectly. So that leads to compassion. Compassion for self and compassion for other. A wise elder in this congregation once reflected to me that as she was aging, she felt like it offered her children the opportunity to care for her in new ways, like it completed a circle in her life. And I found that to be so beautiful to imagine that and to have that opportunity with my own mother, with my own parents, and to imagine that sense of a completion, and I felt that in my own life. Megan Carnarius, the Alzheimer's expert, writes, with dementia, the caregiver must find within themselves that part that is able to practice loving kindness, even during those times when there is no feedback, no appreciation from the other, perhaps even resistance and strife. They must do so with a light touch in order to stay the course. That is an incredible spiritual practice and a gift by practicing that, a gift someone is giving you to practice that. And it's not easy, and that's where compassion for oneself comes back in. Caring for someone with dementia, offering that unconditional love, and forgiving yourself when you miss the mark are all practices and gifts, possibilities for gifts. And then the final one is understanding how we can connect in new ways. We are people of the word, we. We don't dance that much anymore, singing, you know, a little bit more, but we are people of the word, and so when someone stops being able to be on that same course with you, it can be very, very challenging. So we need to find ways, maybe tangible things like a warm egg, shells, or puppets that can help build those threads and weave those connections with people when the ways we are used to are no longer there. Gisela Webb found that music was an especially strong connection with her mother during the late stages of her Alzheimer's. And what she did was she brought music in from the different eras where she heard her mother was living in at that time. And it shifted over time. There was a big band time, and then big band music was a little bit too much. And so then she moved. Her mother was a Catholic, so she moved to the chants of Hildegard. And even in her mother's last days, she was able to experience some sense of peace while her mother was listening to that music, because her essence, her core, was touched by music.